Hare Krishna, Gauranga. Okay, Komas Kakosi? Is that it? I hope I'm not expected to translate in Slovenian as well. Am I? No. That'll definitely be a surprise. Okay, so first of all, I want to seek the blessings of all the devotees here. I feel very nervous because this wasn't part of the program. I thought this weekend it will be all about hearing, chanting, dancing, associating with devotees. And then this is a surprise for me, really. Maharaj asked me a few hours, well, actually 2 hours ago, that maybe you should give the Sunday feast class. And I always think, you know, Maharaj is, you know, he's always, you know, he's got great sense of humor. So Maharaj, this is a great, great sense of humor there. But obviously it's a fact. So just before, as you know, this weekend we had a whole seminar about nectar of instruction. And we had some great, Buddha Bhavana Prabhu and Maharaj gave wonderful sessions and real nectar of the Krishna conscious philosophy. And so it's definitely a high expectation to meet, but I'm going to try my best. Buddha Bhavana Prabhu said it is actually not the right etiquette to speak in front of senior devotees. But since Maharaj has given me this request, so I like to seek the blessings of the devotees so I can share something. I'm definitely don't have much realizations, but I had a great opportunity to associate with great devotees and I have an opportunity to hear a lot. So whatever I heard, I'll be just repeating in today's session. Is that okay? So is it okay if I get your blessings? Yeah. If you do give me your blessings, then can you shout Gauranga? Is that okay? That was very quiet. Can we do it one more time? Okay, one more time so Buddha Bhavana Prabhu can hear it. Okay, good. I'm feeling live and kicking now. Okay, so basically today we are going to speak about Nectar of Instruction, Text 4. But before we do that, I thought we could build it up. First of all, how many of you here is the first time of today's Sunday feast? One person. Welcome. Kakosi? Dobra? Okay, good. That's the only Slovenian I know. Okay, so what I'd like to do is we're going to make a very interactive presentation. One of the objectives I would like to do is share how we share Krishna consciousness to people in London. So we do programs at universities. We have a lot of programs with youths. We have a college at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So we have these different courses that we present. So I hope whatever I present would be useful to the devotees and it helps make sense of our Krishna consciousness philosophy. Yeah, so we'll make it very interactive. So I will need you guys, you wonderful devotees, to partake as well. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay, good. So we're going to start off by, I wanted to ask you is, you know, when in the world when people are very tired, what do they do generally? They one thing that they want to do to overcome their tiredness is they want to relax, correct? Right? They want to relax. So I want to ask you, what are the different ways people do to relax? What do you do when you want to just relax and take time out? What do you do to relax? Sleep? Can you just transcribe it? So we've got Shiv Prabhu from London. He's going to be our transcriber today. So thank you.
My time
of position. Okay. So yeah, one thing is we do sleep. Yeah. Anything else? We play sports. Okay. Sports is another thing. Anything else? Making tea? Drinking tea. Okay, so drinking tea. Go for a walk. Okay.
Hitchhiking.
Absolutely. Hiking the mountains. Okay. I just thought maybe that's a sports that they have in Slovenia that could be popular. Okay. No, don't write hitchhiking, Shiv. He didn't mean that. Okay. Okay, anything else? Music, yes, absolutely. What sort of music are you into, Sridevi Madhuri? Of course. If you asked me 8 years ago, my genre would be completely different. Okay, anything else? It seems like Prabhus don't do anything relaxed. They just work very hard, right? What do you do to relax?
Chanting,
okay. That's a very typical devotee answer. But it's true. Some devotees do chant when they relax. Anything else? Sorry? Meditation, yeah, absolutely. So these are typical things devotees do, but what about people outside in the world? What do they do if they want to actually relax?
Watch TV.
Watch TV, okay. Someone said that with love enthusiasm there. Watch TV. Okay, anything else? What was that? Wellness center. So spa, taking time out, right? Okay. Someone in the back. Intoxication, yeah. I was looking for that one. Okay, going to a beach. Anything else? Intoxication we have. TV we've got. Music we have.
Gambling.
Okay. So there are many different activities that people do to relax. But they did a survey and they wanted to find out what is the top three ways that people do to relax. And do you know what the top three ways were? Any guess? Yeah, so the first thing, you can just circle it. First thing that people do to relax is sleep. So you can just circle sleep. Okay. Second thing people do to relax is intoxication. Okay. And the third thing people do to relax is entertainment. So that could be in the form of music, TV, or playing some sort of game. So just circle TV and music. So it's fine. Yeah. So these are the three ways that people do to relax. And when you look at these three activities, it's something interesting. When you actually analyze these three things, when people actually engage in this activity, what you notice is they're trying to escape reality. Isn't it? Right? When we do these three activities, we're trying to escape reality. You know? And so it's interesting. We're living in a world and we're trying to escape this reality. And three of the most popular ways we do that is these three things. So our scriptures actually explain that the very fact that this desire we have to escape reality, this so-called reality, is completely natural. Okay? It's completely natural. Now, this does not promote that we engage in these three activities. Okay? It's actually meaning that we are actually meant to be of another dimension. Okay? So that's the reason why it's explained that in Krishna consciousness that there are two levels of dimensions. So the dimension we live in is called the material existence. Okay? And the dimension that we don't know much about is the spiritual existence. Okay? And we belong from where? Spiritual. And that is the reason why we have these innate desire to escape this material existence. Does that make sense? It's very subconscious, subtle desires people have, which is very natural. Okay? So, and we're going to come back to that. So the idea is that we've actually, not from this world, we're from the spiritual world. Okay? And another question I do want to ask you is, what do you think the goal of life is?
Go back to Krishna.
Go back to Krishna, to be happy. Well, actually, there's a devotee who had a top on, and he says, what is the goal of life? He said, ask me. So maybe we should ask him. Have you seen that t-shirt? Yeah, I thought that was quite very hilarious. It's wonderful. So the goal of life is very simple. Everyone in this world, no matter what your background is, no matter what species we may be, everyone is looking for one thing in life, and that is called happiness. Okay, now of course happiness is a very broad terminology, and it can be broken down, but since we're devotees, real happiness is when we go back to Godhead and connect ourselves with Krishna. Correct? Right, so that's the goal of life when we've established that. So one thing is, what stops us from being happy?
Our mind.
Our mind? Yeah, you can write this and you can write these things down. Our mind, misidentification, okay? So just to let's clarify, problems leads to suffering, correct? What are the different ways that not only do we as devotees go through as in form of suffering, but also people outside? So we said the mind is a problem. Anything else? We have desires. Desire's a problem. Right? So we shouldn't desire then. That's simple, right? Right? Can we ever stop desiring? The very fact that you want to stop desiring is a desire in itself. Does that make sense? Yeah? So you can't stop desire, but desires could be problems that we have. Anything else? Attachments. Okay. To what? Okay, attachment to the temporary. Absolutely. Anything else? What are the different ways that we suffer? Fear. Absolutely. Fear from what? Fear of the unknown. Absolutely. Fear of the unknown. Okay. Anything else? Absolutely. Fear of loss of loved ones. Yeah? That can lead or cause suffering. What else? Just simple things. Failures. Yeah, failures. That's something. We're not talking about fear in particular, but we're talking about suffering. So failures can lead to suffering? Necessarily? Generally, failures can also lead to real success, right? They say failure is a stepping stone to success, right? Anything else? What are the different problems we have in life that we see? Money. Money. Money is a problem. Really?
Lack of money.
Lack of money. Okay. Lack of money. Okay. Money. Anything else?
Health.
Okay. That's a big one, right? We go through a lot of health issues, right? You know? Health is a big thing. What else?
Family.
Family. I thought they were supposed to give you joy.
Old age.
Old age, absolutely. Okay, so old age is another one that can be an impediment in one sense. Any few last points?
Taxes,
huh? Tax. Okay. Okay, you guys got few lists. When we do this, we have like list after list after list, you know? But the essence is, if you look at this material world, the very nature of this material world is to give us what? Misery. Correct? The very nature of this world is to give us misery. You know, many times people say that if God created this world, then why is there so much suffering? You've heard that one before? Yeah, we all hear that, right? But when you analyze this statement, there's a fault in this statement. Right? The statement that if God created this material world, why is there suffering? We made an assumption in this statement. The assumption is that we think this world is meant to give us pleasure. Does that make sense? Because we assume that, we think, why did God make this world, which is full of suffering? But actually, the very nature of this world is suffering and misery. Okay? And therefore, of course, our scriptures explain that we're looking for happiness in a world that is full of misery. And these miseries are divided into three sections. Right? Everyone know what these three different departments of miseries are? Right? The first one is? Adiatmik, Adibhautik, and Adidevik. So Adiatmik is the miseries caused by your own body and your mind. Yeah? Does your mind give you problems? No? Mine's like, Gurmaj gave a nice example how, like, you know, when you're chanting japa and someone walks in a blue sari and, you know, your mind just traces back, oh, she got this in Lloyd Bazaar, and the mind will take you, like, anywhere but the chanting japa period. Mind is wild, you know? So mind definitely gives us problems, and desires, all this stuff, stems from the mind. So that's first misery, Adi Atmi. Adi Bhautik is miseries caused by other living entities. Yeah, Adi Bhautik is miseries caused by other living entities, right? Like who? Like mosquitoes, right?
In-laws.
I wouldn't know much about that, you see. generally people are who gives us most misery. And it's quite ironic because people who give us the most happiness, but the same, very same people can give us the most distress, isn't it? So that's Adi Bhautik. And then last but not least, you have Adi Devik. These are miseries caused by natural disasters or by demigods, which we have no control over. So,
As long as there is these three miseries in the world, there is no way one can actually experience real happiness. So now the question arises, how do we get rid of this misery? Right? How do we get rid of this suffering, these three miseries that exist in this world? So there is this very famous leader, his name is Martin Luther King. Everyone's familiar with him? Yeah? Now he made a very powerful statement. He said that if you want to create a revolution in society, you just need one tool. Do you know what that one tool is? Get another mic. What's that one tool? Martin Luther King said, if you have this one tool, you can actually create a revolution in society. What do you think that one tool he was referring to? Stand. Sorry?
Stand. Yeah, what are you
standing for? Oh, your stand, like your identity, representation. Okay. Okay, I mean definitely that plays a value, but that's not what he was referring to. If you have this one tool, you can actually create a revolution in society. Huh? Non-violence? Not quite.
Faith?
Conviction? Sorry? Common goal? Okay, that's not what he was referring to. This one tool has all of this thing that you're talking about. Knowledge, bingo. Yes, knowledge. Knowledge is that one tool that can create a revolution in society. Okay? And, is it working? Okay. So basically, I want to show a diagram. This is a diagram that I actually learned when I was traveling with Maharaj in Chicago. And there are a few things that we actually use to actually understand. So this diagram I'm about to show you actually summarizes the whole of our Krishna consciousness philosophy. Okay? So I'm going to show you what this is. So knowledge is actually what will create a revolution in society. You know? And another question is, you know, we talked about all these different problems. What do you think the cause of all problems in society is? Exactly. Bit of a giveaway there, right? Right? Ignorance is the cause of all problems in society. Okay? Now, how do you counteract ignorance?
Knowledge,
exactly. And this is why we're very fortunate to have this wonderful process of Krishna consciousness, because it's based around knowledge. Okay? And I'm going to show you a diagram which actually summarizes all of our philosophy. So if you ever want to explain to somebody what is your philosophy all about, this diagram will be able to graphically help you explain it and present it to other people. Is that okay? Okay, so we're saying ignorance is the cause of all problem. Ignorance of what? Exactly. The biggest ignorance, biggest lack of knowledge society suffers is who we are. Okay? And if you look at all the problems in the world, if people actually understand who they are, the solution is very obvious in one sense. Okay? So this is how all problem began. Okay? So we have an identity. Correct? Yeah, as you can see, I'm very good at art, so this is us. This is living entities. And we're in the spiritual world, okay? So let's say this is the spiritual world, okay? Now, in the spiritual world, what is our real identity? We are the spirit soul, correct? And what is the nature of the soul? Sat. Sat. Chit. Ananda, okay? Ananda. Ananda. Okay, what does sat mean? Eternity. Chit means? Knowledge. And ananda means? Bliss, happiness. This is the very nature of the living entity. Okay? And this is obvious, right? Now, when you ask anyone, who likes knowledge? We all like knowledge, right? If you look at our activity, we're always seeking for some sort of knowledge, correct? Right? How many of you here like the idea of being always healthy? You know, that talks about the concept of eternity. And how many of you would like to be happy all the time? We all do. But does this body actually give you any of this innate desire that we all have? Is our body full of knowledge? No? We're always forgetful, right? Is this body always giving you joy and happiness? No? Right? And it's true. If you look at our body is actually designed to give you more misery than happiness. Okay? And I'll demonstrate how this is. I want all the devotees in this room, in the temple room, to meditate on your right toe. Sorry, Raj, is that okay? Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Can everybody meditate on your right toe? Yeah? Right toe? Everyone's meditating? Okay, now, tell me how much pleasure your toe is giving you right now. Yeah? I see Shiv's in ecstasy. Oh, my toe is wonderful. Sorry. Now imagine someone dropped a rock or a brick on your toe. How do you feel? Painful, right? Now imagine, compare that experience to the experience you're feeling right now. The toe, does it give you more happiness or more misery? More misery. And that is the nature of this body, okay? Now when you're hungry, what do? You eat. What's your favorite food? Pizzas. Oh, okay, prasadam. That's more of a transcendental answer. Yes, prasadam. Okay? Now if you look at this concept of hunger is actually a misery, right? And they say whatever happiness we experience in this material world is actually an absence of misery. Okay, I'll explain. When you're hungry, that's a form of misery, right? Right? When you eat food, right, you feel satisfied. But that's not happiness, that's just absence of misery. You'll feel hungry again, right? Does that make sense? Right? So the happiness we experience in this material world is actually absence of misery. So the only way you can actually experience real happiness is if we actually act upon the soul platform. Does that make sense? Okay? So what happens is we were all in the spiritual world, our original home, our original origin, you could say. And for some reason, we decided to come to the material world. Okay? Now, I don't want to get into why we came here, because that's probably needs like weeks of seminars. But in essence, we had the desire to actually experience the material world without Krishna. Okay? And when we come to the material world, do you know what's the first thing that happens? First thing happens is your consciousness goes through an energy box. I call it the pig, P-I-G. Okay? And when this consciousness, when your Satchit Ananda consciousness actually enters the material world, it actually gets bombarded with this energy called PIG. And when it actually gets bombarded with PIG, what happens is your consciousness actually becomes contaminated. Okay? Does that make sense? Do you know what PIG first of all stands for? Anyone? It's not the animal, just to clarify. PIG, what do you think PIG stands for? What contaminates our consciousness in the material world? Exactly. The three modes of material nature. Okay? So when you're in the spiritual, you actually come to the material world and your consciousness gets contaminated by the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness. And the first thing that goes is your chit potency. This is where they say we suffer from spiritual amnesia. Does that make sense? Yeah? If you lose me, stop me, so then we can make sure everyone's on the same platform. Is that okay? Everyone's with me? Yeah? Say Gaurang if you're with me. That's my way to wake everyone up. Okay? So when you actually get bombarded to the modes of material nature, your consciousness gets contaminated, so you forget what your real identity is. And when your consciousness gets contaminated, you get an option of taking many different bodies. Okay? So the first option is that you get different species of life. Okay? You know how many different species of life there is? 8.4 million species of life. So when your consciousness gets contaminated, you get a choice of 8 million species. Right? This particular type of species. So, you know, it could be an aquatic, then you go through it, you die, your consciousness come back again, it gives you another consciousness, you take another body. You keep on going through this. Once you go through all these 8 million species of life, what's the next thing that happens? You get a more advanced choice. You've actually upgraded yourself. Okay? You get a consciousness of a human being. How many different types of human beings are there? 400,000 types of human species there are. So it's not that there are 400 different types, it's just there are different types of consciousness. Okay? So then once you go through all this, then you've advanced a little and you actually take birth as a human being. Now when you take a birth in human being, things in the material world spices up, right? Because Humans, when you have a human, there's one thing that you have that animals don't have. Intelligence, but intelligence also means you have choices that you can make. Right? So then because we're humans, we make different choices in life. Okay? And because of these choices, now we start desiring things. Okay? And the desire is actually happens through your subtle body, your mind, intelligence, and your false ego. What happens when you desire? What's the next step after you desire something? Okay. I'm just talking about, no, you're right, you desire, but what is, I'm talking in terms of practical. When we desire something, what's the next thing that happens? Action. Exactly. There is an action. You desire, and then there is an action. Okay? And action is performed by the gross body. Okay? When you perform action, what are you accumulating? You're accumulating karma. Sorry, my rectangulars are not exactly rectangular, but you get the gist anyways. Karma. So this is how you accumulate karma. And then eventually, the body's expiry date comes up. And then what happens? Yeah, you die. Correct? Death. Okay? Now, what determines... So then when the body dies, the soul comes out and it goes through this PIG, right? And then you get another consciousness. What determines what body you get in your next life? There are three factors. What are the three factors that determine what your next body is going to be? Desire, absolutely. So desire is one thing. Karma, yes. And the last but not least, final thought. What do you mean final thought? At the time of death, whatever your last thought was, that determines your final thing. So this is last thought. Okay? So this is the cycle that a living entity is going through again and again and again. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right? So would you say this is our basic Christian conscious philosophy? We're in the spiritual world, but with some idea that we've come in the material and we're kind of entangled in this material world. So depending on your desire, karma, and last thought, they combine together and they give you a particular consciousness. That consciousness then gives you either a different animal species, lower species, or human. When you get human, you start accumulating karma. Now, do animals get karma? Animals don't get karma. Why not? Why don't animals get karma? Animals don't make choices? They do make choices. So what's the difference? They don't have high consciousness. That's true. Animals actually do have choices. They do have intelligence. In fact, some animals are probably more intelligent than humans. Right? They say if you want to get rid of all economic problems in society, you just have to get rid of one species. Oh, well done. But please, let's not try to do that. There are other ways of doing it. But animals actually act on instinct. Right? They don't make conscious decision. Whereas humans make conscious decision and hence they get karma. Does that make sense? And so that's the reason why animals actually go through all the... So, you know, we do believe in Darwin's theory, but we call it spiritual evolution. Right? Because the soul will go through all 8 million species together and then it'll get a human body. And then through the human body, it'll keep on going through the cycle until it actually... breaks out of the cycle. So now the question arises, how do you break out of this cycle? Krishna consciousness? Okay, that's very vague, if you could explain me more details. Anyone? Sorry? You have to transcend consciousness. Okay, yeah, so very good. Can I rub this, by the way? Can I raise this? Is that okay? All right, so... Hopefully I won't need this again because it'd be difficult to draw this again, isn't it? Okay. So it's mentioned that actually, if our life is predominated by mode of passion, okay, this is what happens. These are the consequences of different modes. Okay. So if our life is predominated by, say, ignorance, it's actually going to make you go deeper into the material existence. Does that make sense? You become more entangled if your life is predominated by ignorance. If your life is predominated by passion, you're just on the same level. Okay? You don't move up, you don't move down. Whereas in the mode of goodness, when we dovetail and cultivate mode of goodness, what happens is you're not in the spiritual world, but you actually have access. This is like a window to see through the spiritual world. So that's what they say in the mode of goodness, it's actually easier to transcend the modes. Right? So when we have mode of goodness, it becomes very easy to transcend the modes. And then when you do this, this is transcendental mode. Like that. Does that make sense? So now the question is, first we dovetail our life in the mode of goodness, and then we actually transcend the modes. Now I want to explain you why bhakti yoga is powerful. Why is bhakti yoga so powerful?
It goes beyond the modes.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah, okay. Before I do that, actually, I want to say, so we said the biggest problem in society is what? Ignorance, right? Ignorance, okay? Now, just imagine, just because of this one thing, imagine how much problem we can get into, okay? Ignorance of what? Your identity, okay? So we think that we're this material body. When we have this material body, what's the first thing that happens? You have desire. So this is called sinful desire. When you desire based on the material body, it's called sinful desire. When you have sinful desire, what's the next step? Sinful action. Okay? And then after sinful action, two things happen. Either you get something called a parabdha karma, that's AK, okay? And I'll explain what that is. Or you get parabdha karma, that's PK. Okay, so parabdha karma means karma that's already manifested. And when that manifested karma comes about to you, it leads to suffering. Does that make sense? Yeah? When you have sinful action, then you get a parabdha karma. What does a parabdha karma mean? Yes. So it says unmanifested karma. Okay? Does everyone know what unmanifested karma means? What is unmanifested karma? Not fructified. Yes, Peru?
You will get karma next
time. In the future. It could be any moment, right? It could be any moment. So, a parabdha karma means it's unmanifested karma. So this karma hasn't come to you yet. And the more you build up your parabdha karma, you know what happens? Your proclivity increases. You know what proclivity means? Your tendency, your inclination. Yeah, so that increases. If your inclination increases, you will actually increase your sinful or your material desires. Are you with me? Karanga. Okay. This is not concocted idea. This is Nectar of Devotion, just to clarify. So where is he getting all this from? So this is actually Nectar of Devotion, right? That explains how karma and how this process of bhakti yoga actually works. So let me just explain this diagram. Because we're ignorant of our identity, we start desiring on the body. So we think this, whatever these things will make me happy. So then we start acting upon the body, based on the body. And when that happens, two things happen. You either get manifested karma, whereby you suffer, or you get unmanifested karma, where your tendency to have more material desire increases. So then you desire more sinful action, more manifested karma, more proclivity. It goes until you actually get manifested karma. Does that make sense? Yeah? So now, how do you break out this cycle? How do you break out this cycle? Okay, we said bhakti yoga, but how does bhakti yoga help? What happens with bhakti yoga? Huh? It changes your desire, but, when we try to give Christian consciousness to others, does it actually change the desire automatically? What's the first thing that gets affected in this chart?
Which is the mode of goodness.
Mode of goodness. When you do bhakti yoga, what's the first thing that gets affected here? Yes, why?
Because you start living differently. You don't eat meat anymore, gambling that time.
Okay. When you do bhakti yoga, the first thing that gets affected is your parabdha karma. Right? You know they say, when you take devotional service, you're burning off your karma. Right? That's what they say. by performing devotional service, you're burning away your past karma. Right? But someone could say, but I'm getting my karmic reaction, so how is it being burnt off? It's not your prarabdha karma that's getting burnt off. It's your prarabdha karma. Right? So when you do devotional service and you cut your finger, right, it's mentioned that actually according to your karma, your hand was supposed to be injured. But because you're performing devotional service, Krishna just takes that token value. Are you with me? Okay, good. It's quite technical, but I thought I'd try that. That's why we have diagrams. So when you do bhakti yoga, you burn away your aparabdha karma. And when you burn away aparabdha karma, your proclivity or your tendency of having material desire decreases. When your desire decreases, your material action decreases. When your material action decreases, your aparabdha karma decreases. And then eventually, your aparabdha karma decreases. And when you actually perfect your self-realization, that's how you break out the cycle that I showed originally. Does that make sense? Yeah? Is that okay? Okay. So now, what has this got to do with nectar instruction, text number 4, right? You're probably wondering. If not, I'm wondering. So, I'm just thinking about it now. Let me just think about it. Okay, so in life, it's mentioned, whatever you do, there's 3 steps that happens. 3 steps. Everything happens in 3 steps. Okay? So the first step is you have the goal. Right? The second step is you have the process. And the third step is etiquette. Okay? Like culture and etiquette. Okay, culture and etiquette. What is etiquette, by the way? Why should we follow etiquette? Socially accepted behavior. Are devotees' behavior socially accepted? I'm just trying to understand culture and etiquette. Okay, good. Whenever in life, first thing is, the very most important thing is to establish the goal, correct? When you establish the goal, there's a process in which you can actually achieve the goal, right? Now, in order for you to practice this process, you need to follow certain culture and etiquette. This basically means a conducive environment where you can actually follow the process. Does that make sense? And I'll give you an example. Say you want to do very well in your university degree. So what's the goal? Pass your exams, right? How do you pass your exams? What do you need to do?
Study.
You have to study. So the process is? Study, right? What do you think the cultural etiquette is? The environment that helps you study to pass your exams? Exactly. Library, school, university, etc. Does that make sense? Yeah? Imagine you want to make, now the goal is you want to make a wonderful feast for the devotees, right? So the goal is to make a feast. What's the process? You have to cook. What do you think the cultural etiquette is? Yeah, ingredients, but environment would be the kitchen. Does that make sense? Now imagine if I take the goal out of the picture. Say I took out the goal that you're going to university to pass your exams. Say you take the goal out. Would anyone would be inspired to study? No? No one would, right? Would anyone would be inspired to go to the library or go to university? No, because you've taken the goal out. So one of the reasons why society nowadays are struggling, suffering, is because there is no clear goal in life. So no matter what process or etiquette you follow, it'll be useless. Okay? So, what is our goal? We established earlier on. Go back to Krishna. Go back to the spiritual world, Krishna Prema. Correct? The process is what? We establish what? Bhakti Yoga. And culture and etiquette is actually very important, and that's why we have scriptures like Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion, because they teach you how you can actually use the different environment whereby you can actually becomes easy to practice bhakti yoga. Does that make sense? Yeah? So this is why you've got culture, etiquette, process, and goal using that diagram. So before I go into text 4 and talk about what text 4 is all about, and why is that useful? Are there any questions based on what we spoke about so far? Goal of life is the same in one sense for everyone. That you're the spirit soul. We're the soul. And we come from the spiritual world. So the goal of life is we have to go back home, back to Godhead. Right.
For the
How to find what?
The goal in this life.
Goal for ourselves?
Yeah, for the goal for spiritual
world. Oh, semi-goals you mean?
Yeah,
so that's why we have books on culture and etiquette where they set short-term goals to achieve your long-term goal. Does that make sense? So success in Krishna consciousness comes, if you follow this very simple formula, you'll be successful. Do you want another formula?
Yeah.
Can I get a Gauranga then? Okay, so Gauranga. I'm sure you've heard of this. It's very, very common. And the formula is A, B, C, D, E. I could go on and on. No. But what do you think A stands for?
Association
of Devotees. Okay. What do you think B stands for? Budgets. No. More important?
Books.
Okay. Books. C stands for? Oh, yeah. That one. Okay. That one. Chanting. Okay. What do you think D stands for?
Diet.
Specifically diet. What do you think E stands for? Enthusiasm. You can go, I've got down engagement of service. Okay, because we're active beings, so you need to be engaged. I mean, to be honest, you can go on and on. F could stand for festival. You see the F, G. G stands for Gora Arti. G. K stands for Kirtan. Exactly, so you can go on and on. But these are the main five things if we have in our life, we can be very successful. Now, out of all these five things, right? It may be difficult to balance all of this, right? But there is one thing that if you just have one of this, you can still remain in Krishna consciousness. What do you think that one thing is? Who says books? If there is one thing in this list that if you have and maintain this, you can still remain in Krishna consciousness. What do you think that one thing? Who thinks it's books? Who thinks it's chanting? Chanting? Who thinks it's diet? Engagement in service? Association.
Yes.
Yeah. It's actually association. This is the one thing that will keep you in devotional service. Even if going gets tough, you may not be able to do any of these things. As long as you have association, you'll be okay. And then it's in association that you can set your mini goals, basically. Is that okay? Yeah? Great. So, shall we do text four? Is that okay? Can we do text four? Okay, great. All right, so text four of Nectar of Instruction is basically talking about how we deal with different devotees, okay? And it's very simple. I mean, I'm not going to speak anything elaborately, but this whole weekend we spoke a lot on text one, text two. Bhuta Bhavana Prabhu and Chandramani Maharaj, of course, spoke really nicely and they were telling us and teaching us how we can create a conducive environment in our life so we can practice bhakti yoga to achieve the ultimate goal. So when you talk about association, it's very important that you know the science of how you can associate with devotees. You know, so there are do's and don'ts, and text 4 actually teaches us how we should deal with different devotees. Okay? And it's very simple. This is something that we do in outside, people outside in the material world do anyways, but this is something that also Rupa Goswami recommends. Okay, so the first thing that Rupa Goswami says, that if you do these six activities amongst devotees, then you can create a loving relationship, which is based on love and trust. So the first thing is, inquire confidentially, and also reveal your mind in confidence. Okay, this is very important because, you know, when you're inquiring confidentially, when you're speaking to your senior devotees or the spiritual master, then a lot of problems in life get resolved. You know, and many times, you know, real association actually means discussing Krishna Katha. I've heard stories where in different countries, there would be a big popular football match or cricket match. So devotees will get together, they'll have prasadam, and then watch the final match. I just want to clarify, that is not association. Okay, real association means when you get together and you're discussing Krishna Katha and how it actually applies in our own day-to-day life.
You know? And you can also inquire confidentially. So this whole weekend that we had was based on the two things. You know, we inquire confidentially by asking questions. And also when we're asking questions, we're revealing our mind with the devotees also. And through this way, you're actually developing loving relationship. So that's the first two. The second two, he says, is offering prasadam and accepting prasadam. Now, I know for a fact no one has a problem with any of these two. Right? No one has. Like, I know I'm leaving on Tuesday, and I'm very confident that Ananda Vardhanam Prabhu is going to give me like a bag of maha sweets and some pizzas from Holy Food. You know? And that's part of loving exchange. Right? I think so I want to thank you for that in advance. Like that. So that's offering prasadam, accepting prasadam also. And offering charity and accepting charity is just simple things like exchange of gifts. You know, exchange of gifts. So when we perform these six activities with devotees, then practicing bhakti yoga becomes very easy. You know, and when we continue doing this, one can actually achieve your goal of life in general. Like that. So, I mean, this was just a simple presentation I thought I could present. I hope it was useful, you know. And I guess I could open up, devotees can ask questions if you like. Maraj is here. So Maraj, if you would also, okay, I'm going to answer the questions, I guess. any questions based on what we spoke about today? Or if we don't have time, then I can actually, one of the things I do in my sessions is I play devil's advocate and I question you guys and to test your knowledge. So we can also play that game as well. You know, so if you don't have any questions and if we have time, Prem Gopi Maji, I don't know, as in, shall we continue? We can continue. Okay, fine. So. Okay. So I'm going to ask you another question, right? So we said that we're not this body, we're the soul, correct? Yeah, sure, please. Apsara? I don't know if that's the right question for a brahmachari to answer, you know? but you know what? I can deal with the essence of that question. Okay? So, and that's what I was actually going down to. So we said we're not this body, right? So let's just actually look into this little deeper, okay? How many different levels of... So, okay, if you ever want to explain to people about the soul, this is how you do it. So we have different identities. Someone, you're walking down the street, and someone says, who are you? What would you say? What would you say? Your name? You say your name? What else? Occupation? Okay, where your origin? Okay, anything else? Like nationality, let's say nationality. No, actually no, I don't know why you're laughing, but this is very important. Gender, it actually is classified as one of your identities. What else? Anything else? Title. Well, that comes under gender. Education? Your age? Any hobbies? Your likes and dislikes? Dislikes? Okay, so that'll come under age, so we're good. We're good there. Anything else? Religion? Okay. Yeah, marital status. So the list goes on and on. We have so many identities based on the body, correct? Now it's interesting that we have so many identities. No wonder we suffer from identity crisis, isn't it? Right? It's like so many different identities we have. What do I identify myself with? And actually, if you analyze this, we are none of this. Because there's an essence of you that doesn't change. Is that true? Yeah, there's an essence of us that doesn't change. Does your name change? Yeah, name change, of course, it can change. Occupation changes? Nowadays with job situations, it's changing every week, right? Okay. Nationality changes? Of course. What about education? Does your education change? You're always upgrading your education and your qualification. Okay, what about your age? Every moment, your age is changing.
Yeah? Your likes and dislikes? It changes? Your religion changes? And your marital status, does it change? Does it change? Yeah, of course it does. What about your gender? Nowadays, there's a facility for that as well. Right? So that changes. So in essence, we can't be any of these things. Correct? We can't be none of these things. So who are we? So when you, in the Bhagavad Gita, it's actually explained that there is three levels of our identity. Okay? And the first level of identity... This is called abstract art. It's supposed to be very popular. Okay? So that's one thing. Okay? This is not Gingerbread Man. This is actually us. Okay. Believe me, I've improved a lot in the past years. If you think this is bad, imagine what it was like 3 years ago. Okay. So Bhagavad Gita simply explains there's three levels of our identity. Okay? Jai Shishi Panch Tattva Ki. Okay, there's three levels of identity. The first level of identity is something called the gross body. Correct? What is the gross body made out of? Five elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. Gross body means that these are physical things that we can actually see, feel, you can touch. The second level of your identity is called the subtle body. What is a subtle body? You got the mind. You got the intelligence and false ego. Okay, what's the difference? What's the ego, first of all? Identity, correct. So false ego means false identity. Okay, so these are the three things. So that's second level of identity. And what's the final level of identity? This is who you are. Okay, now I want to just try to understand this concept. What is the difference between the mind and intelligence? Is there a difference between the mind and the intelligence? Yes? What's the difference? What's the mind? What is the mind? Sorry, I didn't get that. What was that? The mind's a troublemaker? I mean, that fits the job title, yeah, in one sense. What's the intelligence? Huh? What's the intelligence? The intelligence choosy, and what's the mind then? Accepting and rejecting. There's a big difference between the mind and the intelligence, okay? The nature of the mind is of threefold. Whenever you want to know whether it's the mind doing the talking or the intelligence, this is how you know. If you're thinking, if you're feeling, or you're willing to do something, that's your mind. Does that make sense? So what's intelligence? Intelligence does a discrimination. Yeah? Intelligence does a discrimination. So for example, if you're diabetic and someone gives you Anandavardhanam Prabhu's Mangalarti sweets, okay? And what do you think your mind will say when you see this sweet? Eat it. And if you have a strong intelligence, what do you think your intelligence will say? Why? Because it's discriminating. Does that make sense? Okay? So that's your mind intelligence, and the false ego is when you think you're this body. Now when I present this, people are like, oh, it's a bit too confusing. There's so many different elements of our existence. So let's simplify it. Okay? I'm gonna simplify this. Alright, we're gonna play another game. It's called, you know what Pictionary is? Should I do it? Okay, Shiv Prabhu is giving me the blessing, so I'm gonna do this. Okay, I want you to guess what this is. It's not potatoes, sorry. Shiv, can you take a picture? I'm going to frame this.
You can take the whole board.
Okay. Anyone can guess what this is? What do you think these five things are? No, no, what is this? These are horses, okay? horses. Can you not tell? Look, you got the four legs, you got a head, and the body's there as well. Okay. And then you've got what do you call this? It's called the rain. Who do you think this is? Who do you think this is? Charioteer. Okay. And this is? The passenger. And this is what? Charioteer. Okay. So what do you think the five senses represent? No, wait. Let me finish. I'm saying what are the five senses? That's what I meant to say. That worked, huh? Okay. What are the five senses we have? You have eyes, nose, tongue, hear, and touch. So that's represented by the five horses. What do you think the reins are? What's the rein? The mind. The rein is the mind. Okay. Who do you think the driver is? Intelligence. Okay. That's your intelligence. Who do you think the passenger is? The soul. That's we. What do you think the chariot is? Huh? That's your gross body. Exactly. That's your gross body. So life is basically a journey from A to B. A is a material world where we are. B is a spiritual world where we need to go to. In order for us to go to the spiritual world, we've been provided this facility. We've got a horse, which is the five senses. We've got the reins, which is the mind. And we have an intelligent driver, which is intelligence. And you're the soul. The body is like the chariot. Okay? And therefore, this is a facility that's been provided by Krishna. So if we actually maintain the senses, maintain the mind and the intelligence, we have a smooth journey to our final destination. Okay? And this is why, Nectar of Instruction, before we even start the seminar, in the preface, Rupa Goswami says that it's very crucial in order for one to make spiritual advancement. What's the crucial thing he said? We have to do what? You have to control the mind and the senses. And I'll tell you why. Imagine all of these five horses were allowed to go in whichever direction they wanted to. What do you think the driver will experience? It'll be difficult for the driver to control, correct? And it'll go all over the place. How do you think the passenger will feel? Uncomfort. Yeah, exactly. Discomfort, right? And therefore, if you have the senses controlled, the mind controlled, the intelligence strong, then it's easy for us to maintain our body and continue on our journey. Okay? And therefore, that's why it says that by controlling the senses, you're focusing, the senses are controlled. But another way to help control the sense, which is wild, correct? Our senses can't be controlled, is wild. Another way is mentioned by reading scriptures. You actually strengthen your intelligence. By strengthening your intelligence, the intelligence becomes strong to control the mind and the senses. So even if your senses want to go wild, you'll have stronger willpower to actually subdue the mind. So that's why when we control the four senses, five senses, and we actually feed the intelligence with knowledge, it becomes quite easy, like that. So that's the concept of the body, mind, and the soul, like that. So questions, anyone? Are we okay with time, Prem Gopi Maji? No, we're not. It's okay. 5 more minutes? Yeah. It's up. If anyone has any questions. They say at the end of any session, if no... Yes, Prabhu. What if the rain's brain? That's called brain hemorrhage, isn't it? No. You can't take this analogy too literally, right? But the essence is the mind can go wild. The mind can go wild, and therefore, by, since you brought it up, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Krishna, this, I know something is bad, I know something I shouldn't do, but I yet still do it. Why do you think that is? It is lust only, okay? So in this whole system, the thing that causes problem is lust. Lust is basically the desire to satisfy the body, okay? The desire to satisfy the senses. Okay? And all of these five senses are actually susceptible to lust. So the ears want to enjoy itself. So you want to hear nice music. That's a form of lust. The nose want to smell something nice. You know? And tongue want to eat nice things. And just like this, lust enters your system. And when lust enters the system, this is what bewilders the mind. You know? So one way to stop mind becoming bewildered is controlling the senses. But another way to stop the lust, say if lust does get into your system, then you have the intelligence which fights back. So that's why in the third chapter, Krishna says by controlling the senses and by spiritual intelligence, right, you can conquer lust. These are the two factors. Is that right, Maharaj? These are the two. Sorry, I just want to clarify. Okay. All right. Like that. Is that okay, Prabhu? Is that okay? Okay, Jai. Any other questions? Yes, Shiv.
Could you explain how sometimes it's easy to understand the exchange of prasadam and the exchanging of confidential words is beneficial, but how is exchanging of gifts beneficial? Sometimes it can seem a little superficial. That's what I'm saying.
So yeah, Shiv Prabhu is saying that exchanging of prasadam, revealing your mind and all this stuff is beneficial. But how is exchanging of gifts beneficial? That's a good question. Do devotees like receiving gifts? Do you like giving gifts? Why do you give gifts? Sorry? To please the devotee, so you give gifts? Shridevi Maji? Okay, wonderful. So by giving gifts, you're pleasing the devotees. And the gifts could be anything, and could be some practical things as well. You know, if someone wants a car, you give them a car. Simple, right? Right? But the essence is, I think the exchange of gifts is an element of pleasing. That's why. Sometimes you have to accept gift to please devotees also. You know? So the element is pleasing. The pleasing element. Like that. Thank you. I'll expect my gift later, yeah? Like that. Is there any other questions? Because I mean, I can go on and on, so, but I don't want to take the time. They say, you know, at the end of any session, if no one has questions, it means two things. Either you understood everything, or you understood nothing. So I'm hoping you understood something, right? Okay, Jay, is that okay? Jay, thank you. Gaur Premanande, Haribol. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much for this very dynamic and enlivening lecture. Torej zahvalila samo za zelo živahno predavanje. Zdaj pa, kot veste, je današnji program malo drugačen kot sicer. Ne bomo imeli kirtana, temveč bomo nadaljevali z eno od teh šestih stvari, o katerih smo govorili. Častili bomo prasadam. Pred tem pa imamo še nekaj obvestil. Spomnili so me, da pozdravili bi tudi nove goste. No? Imamo enega danes prvič, če je slučajno še kdo, je tamle naša receptorka za goste, Romana, tako da lahko potem stopite k njej. Torej še v angliščini, da povem. So for English speaking, the program now is what will follow is prasadam, and then after prasadam there will be Gaura Arati Kirtan, and I'm sure you don't want to miss Kirtan with Chandramali Maharaj. So the Kirtan will be around 6:30, and then at 7 we will continue with a lecture given by Chandramali Maharaj. And the announcements that we have, I would like to invite Sri Devi Mataji. Actually, Soumya Datri Mataji. Okay, so I got the book. Torej imam v rokah knjigo. In sicer mislim sem, da bo Sri Devi Mataji kaj o njej povedala, ampak Sri Devi Mataji, can you maybe come and say something about the book? Because I don't know this book. Okay, so torej knjiga, naslov je Heart and Soul Connection, je pa to Devotional Guide to Marriage, Service and Love. Se pravi, če si želite uspešno zakonsko življenje, služenje, bhakti, ljubezen, to pa je v bistvu kompilacija, oziroma knjiga, ki jo je izdal Grihasta Vision Team, katerega članica je tudi Sri Devi Mataji. Tako da ta knjiga je na voljo, pri njej Sri Devi Mataji, lahko pogledate, kdo je to? Yes. Tako da, če si želite pobliže pogledati to knjigo, ker več o njej ne znam povedati, ker jo prvič imam v rokah, tako da, če želite več zvedeti o njej, stopite do nje. In pa imamo še enega prebuje tukaj, ki bi tudi želel povedati nekaj o knjigah. The word is yours.
Hare Krishna to the devotees. Hare Krishna? Hare Krishna. At the back by the door, there is a set of books called Holy Jail. And the Holy Jail has been written and compiled by our guest speaker. Someone's holding it up, if you'll take a look. Very attractive book cover. By His Holiness Chandramouli Swami. It's a touching compilation of His current service, main service, apart from leading us all back to Godhead, is prison preaching. So, prison preaching is an extremely difficult task. You're meeting incredible people, you're meeting people who are in serious suffering, and it also reminds us whilst reading this book of our current situation, how our current situation is not it's not unlike a prison cell. So this compilation of prisoner stories is extremely inspiring, it's extremely insightful, and I would heavily, heavily recommend that you get it and read it along with the Prabhupada books that you have. So there are prices with them. The hardback copies are 15 euros and the softback copies are 10 euros. So please come and see me, either myself or is Vishnupriya Mataji here? Vishnupriya Mataji. And we will happily give you one of these, and I think Maharaj is happy to sign the copies also. Sorry, a little Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna.